Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, November 1st, 2010. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Are You Doing What You Love? Then Why Not? With my guest, Marjalee Freeman, motivational speaker and employment trainer. I want to welcome all of you, my listeners. I am so honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. Now, if you're listening live, I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. Now, if you're on the phone lines, you do that by pressing #1 to let me know you have a question or a comment. If you're over there in the chat room, you just type in your questions or your comments, and I'll be able to see them and read them on the air. Many of you are listening to the recorded version of this show, so I want to thank you and I want to welcome you as well. Regardless of how you access the show, if you enjoy it, please don't keep it a secret. On my show page, go ahead and register yourself as a friend of the show, and then let your friends know about this show over on Twitter, on Facebook, and of course, over on Facebook, I want you to go ahead and click that like button. And you can find me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/coloryourlifehappy. Now, I know many of you have your own businesses. So before we move on, I want to tell you about a business tool I used to help me discover my ideal client. Trying to approach every person with the same approach is like using a BB gun to hit a bullseye. It's kind of tough to go after clients in general. You need to know who your ideal client is. By working through the activities I used and using the guidance of the audio recording, I was able to take the guesswork out of my marketing with a product called www.idealclientactionguide.com. That's the website. The product is called Ideal Client Action Guide. Now, if you are ready to grow your business, add more clients, and enjoy the increased profits you deserve, then tailoring your marketing to your ideal client is the key to your success. So do what I did. Get your copy of the guide today at www.idealclientactionguide.com. Now, again, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Flora Brown, author, coach, and inspirational speaker. I invite you to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, where you can sign up for life coaching. Now, if you're ready to make that U-turn, Y-O-U, turn in your life, I'm also now booking personal appearances for 2011. So if you want me to appear in person to motivate, train, or inspire your group, your staff, your event, just submit a request on my website. Up at the top of my homepage, you'll see a tab or a link that says Book Flora. Just click that and it'll take you to where you can contact me. Or you can just email me directly at flora@florabrown.com. How easy is that? Now, over on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. To get at that goal, each week I interview guests from various fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships. We talk about change and adversity, parenting, wealth creation, career, all of those things which contribute to our lasting happiness. Today's episode is Are You Doing What You Love? Then Why Not? With my guest, Marjalee Freeman, who is a motivational speaker and trainer for her own company, ML Freeman Consulting. For 18 years, she's had her company, and as an independent contractor, her area of expertise is employment training, which includes navigating the job market, that's before and after college, resumes at work, turning conflict into cooperation, working with those you don't like, and we all need that, team building to succeed, strategies for those re-entering the workplace, and many more. She is in successful partnerships with other speaking companies as well, such as Pro Speakers Bureau and SkillPath Seminars. Marjalee currently serves on the board of directors for a nonprofit employment training designed specifically to cater to the needs of those individuals who are battling mental illness, which is a mental health problem, transitioning from incarceration or drug rehabilitation programs. She was the very first employment specialist to work and build the employment center, which now has started with 2 employees in 1995. Now they have 15 employees. She has won countless awards for being a pioneer employment facility or facilitator at this facility. She currently works in consultant capacity, networking with the community on their behalf. It is my pleasure to welcome Marjalee Freeman. Hi, Marjalee.
Hi, Flora. Hi, listeners.
Hey, welcome to the show, and this is a very exciting topic. I know people are eager to hear about this because this is about all we hear on the news about the job market, isn't it?
You got it.
So let's jump right in, because finding a job is a very sensitive topic because so many people are frustrated with their failure to get hired. They are applying for jobs, but during this economy, it seems to be tougher and tougher. And yet, some companies are hiring people, and so there's something we need to know that will help those of us who are seeking. Now, finding a job these days is complicated, not just by the fewer jobs that they say that are available, but the many skills that are required and the various approaches to landing a job. So let's begin by discussing how finding a job is different now in the 21st century than it used to be in the past. Could you discuss that for us?
Sure, absolutely. One of the things that I have found, Flora, when it comes to looking for jobs, is part of it is a mentality. And what I mean by that is a lot of people are still using old school techniques to new school techniques. And give you an example, if I was able to find a job like 8 years ago and it took me 3 months in order to do so, most people still believe today that it shouldn't take me more than 3 months to find a job. But the employers, basically, it is like a buffet of talent that is out there, and they don't have to take you. I mean, selection is very limited. And so, really, it's almost like the housing market. If I want you, I'll buy you, and I'll buy you for how much I think you're worth. And that's frustrating for a lot of people who are almost at this point so desperate, they're taking absolutely anything.
So you're saying our mentality, first of all, we have to adjust our attitude and our thinking and realize that the situation has changed. And also realize employers have more to choose from, is what you're saying.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the frustrating part, because you're also competing against a number of people where before it was a very limited market. If you wanted to get in senior level management, there was very limited amount of people that they could really choose from that were great at their jobs and also would work at a certain salary. Now, if you're competing, you might be competing with thousands of people where before it might have only been a few hundred. So, and that's very, very frustrating for people who, A, know that they're gifted at what they do, and B, they still need to work.
Yes, yes. And another thing that seems to be very different now is probably the skill set that employers expect you to have, and also the fact that now we have the online options as well as offline that we used to have before. So can you speak to that, how the skill set, the expectation of skills has changed?
Yes, ma'am. One of the things, again, because technology literally has taken over, you've got to be extremely savvy in how you use technology. And again, for some people, it is very difficult to transfer the skills that they have and to utilize the technology to their advantage now. So I highly recommend anytime you get an opportunity to tell people to go to take training, literally. Mm-hmm. Computer training is critical because it doesn't matter what your field of expertise is. You've got mm-hmm. to have that as in your back pocket to pull out specifically in that you mm-hmm. can maneuver it, you know how it works, and you don't have to be a programmer per se, but people mm-hmm. have an expectation of computer software has got to be number one in terms of what you're going to offer. You can't just say, I'm a hard worker. And some of the times when you look at
people's
resume, their opening statement is, I'm a hard worker, I'm dedicated to the job, I'm very flexible in my skills and X, Y, or Z, which means absolutely nothing to someone mm-hmm. who is looking for something very specific. You have got to target your expertise.
When you talk about that technology, the importance of it, I can remember, over 20 years ago, that even applications for teachers at the community college level when I was applying many years ago, they had one of the requirements, computer knowledge preferred. And by the time I retired, computer knowledge was required.
It was required.
And I can remember some of the teachers who had been there a long time fighting tooth and nail when we switched from, you know, gradually switched to using the computer and the printers more and more.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember one guy who was almost gripping his typewriter and didn't want them to take it out of his office, right?
Oh, yes.
And
oh,
he
yes.
was like,
and
no,
even
I'm just going to stick with my typewriter. They said, you can't stick with your typewriter. We are removing them. You are going to have to go to computer training and learn it. And he eventually did, and it was so cute. He would come into office sometimes and go, I learned to use a mouse today. And we would just laugh. But it was.
Well, and then let me say this. For some of you who are, on the senior level when it comes to employment, some of you may remember just learning Word Perfect 4.2. Oh, that was a monster. Shift F8, Alt F9. Oh,
that's
that was
right.
Just, and even if you look at cell phones today, Flora, every week there is a new laptop, new computer system. Now we've gone to WordPerfect and Microsoft VistaPrint, and every 2 weeks, literally, they are changing something in the way of software. I broke my cell phone, went back, and I showed them what I did, and they were like, this is antique, ma'am. You're going to have to get something up to date. You know, it's a little frightening, and I know it is to people who are having to jump into totally different technology.
Exactly. And you brought up a good point about training. I think that people who currently have jobs need to be on the lookout for training at their companies. I know some companies, especially if you're working for the city and state, offer ongoing training in computers and other things. And many employees look at those listings and say, I don't want to learn that.
That's right.
I think that's something that here you have the training available free, and many times you get time off from your duties to go take the training. That's really a wonderful, that's a gold mine. You need to go take advantage of that while you can.
And even so, companies now are required to offer staff training because they understand, too, that people need to keep up with their new technology as it's growing and changing as well. And so mm-hmm. if the company is willing to invest in you, take advantage. But the other mm-hmm. aspect of that, too, is you have to be willing to invest in yourself. That means not mm-hmm. just training classes, but picking up some of the books and information that's going to assist you, not just in computer technology, but even in strategies for finding new jobs now. There's a book out called now The Brand Called You, which is called Branding Yourself, just like, let's say, Cox Communication is a brand. Anything. Pepsi is a brand. Each one of them mm-hmm. has an area of expertise that sets them apart from anything else. And you, too, mm-hmm. have got to have something that sets you apart from the rest of the group.
Hmm. I think this is probably one of the most startling differences for the modern job seeker to understand, this whole concept of branding. So they very much need to get this book. The Brand Call You is the book you refer to?
Absolutely.
Take a look at that.
Written by Peter Montagna, M-O-N-T-O-Y-A, with Tim Valdea, V-A-N-D-E-A. H-E-Y, the brand called You. And to give you an example, is my brand is employment training. And so it wasn't until when I was building the employment center for the Lori Mitchell Employment Center, it wasn't until I was building that that people could not say my name. So I've been Marsha, Marla, Marba, and my favorite was Mabel. But anyway, let me get back. So they couldn't remember my name. But what they would say is, you know, the employment lady. The lady who helps you with employment, the employment lady. And it really started to stick because everything that I did was always related to helping people build and understand what it is about employment that they need to have. And so employment lady is my brand.
Oh, okay. That's wonderful. That's a good example to give. Now, you mentioned the brand. We need to create our own brand. What are some of the key strategies then that the modern job seeker needs to carry out to find jobs and then to increase their chances of getting hired once they apply for these jobs? What are some specific things you can point out to us?
Excellent question. If you are in the healthcare industry, your brand might be working with the elderly. And that doesn't just mean working in a hospital. You can also work at a hospice. You can also work at an organization that specializes in health care for the elderly. That is a brand because it is a specialty. Everybody may not have the expertise or the training to do that. An anesthesiologist is a specialty because you work in a field that is very specified and it also sets you apart. If you're going to work in entertainment, entertainment doesn't necessarily mean being in front of the camera. There are people who make hundreds of thousands of dollars, Flora, as a voiceover. That is a talent.
Right.
What they're doing now is now they're using people in Hollywood to do voiceovers for cartoon caricatures. And you have to use the talents and skills and really broaden your thinking when it comes to employment. They have people now that are teachers or instructors, but now they also have something called long-distance training or long-distance learners. They teach you, but literally you can be taught straight out of your home in front of your laptop with your slippers on, you know, wherever you are. They also have occupations, professional bloggers, website designers, people who work in solar thermal techniques or researchers. Every occupation that is required also have people that research in that particular field. So there's just, you have to broaden your thinking when it comes to job placement. It's not just being a receptionist. It is being an executive administrative support staff. So we have to get past that singular thinking to broaden your horizons in terms of employment possibilities.
Okay, and I can see the benefit of this, two benefits. Number one, of course, it separates you from the masses who are just looking for something general, let's say like healthcare, if you say that you're working with the elderly. Also, it enables you to, assuming this is something you enjoy doing, it increases the chances you're going to find a job that you really love, something that's in your area of expertise, instead of just getting thrown into the general healthcare market, for example.
No question. Absolutely no question. And the reason for that is we are on the average, statistically, we are working an extra 10 years past what we used to work. Most people literally, as you probably know, retired at 65. Now more people are in the industry and are competing against those who are just coming into the field up until 70 some of the time. And Confucius said, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. So it's not just about finding a job as well. It is about finding something you enjoy and something you would do even if you never got paid to do it.
Okay. That's a good point. And back to the hiring, though, I want to have you tell us what are some things that, let's say I found some jobs that look like what I want, either online or wherever people go to look for jobs. What are some tips you can give me about applying for these jobs? You've talked about the brand. What about the actual application? Should I complete the application and still send a resume and a cover letter, or what are some specifics that people should do when they're applying for jobs?
Absolutely. One of the things that I highly recommend is that when people fill out an application and then they email it, most people never follow up. There might be a shot at it, but we just assume that if they don't contact us, we shouldn't contact them. Your name should be in their face at least once a week. That means if you already have it saved on your system, you should be sending it once a week until you get a response. And even if the response is, we found someone, try to contact them again, email them and say, I'm interested to know what were the aspects that, you know, what were the requirements? Did they hire yet? Because there are times that the position may still be out in cyberland and has never been filled. But because people don't follow up, they don't always know. There should be a cover letter that you put in your email.
Okay.
What people tend to do is they attach a resume or an application, and they just send it, no information at all. You always need to be very specific in terms of which position you are applying for. That includes putting the number, putting the email address, putting the web page in which you found them, all the critical information, and it also needs to be a very brief introduction. Just like you did, Flora, to introduce your radio program, there needs to be an introduction of you as well in your cover letter. It doesn't necessarily, however, need to be a full cover letter. Your email address is your cover letter.
Okay. Wow. Now, what about, let's say I've gotten asked to come in for an interview. I know the interview can be fraught with problems. What are some tips you can give us on the actual interview process once we've been successful in getting an appointment to go in and see an employer? What are some tips you can give us there?
Okay. That first impression is so powerful. It takes between 7 to 10 seconds to form a powerful image, a powerful first impression. And so people tend to be very relaxed, I've noticed, in terms of how we dress. You don't dress for the position you want. You want to dress for the position you are going for. And something as simple, Flora, as actually wearing a jacket can actually make a difference.
Okay.
And it's a simple thing. But not only do you need to present yourself well, you need to also be able to shake hands. Eye-to-eye contact is very important, because people are watching everything from what you say to your body language. And a firm handshake is a very strong beginning. And it's important, because a lot of times people aren't sure, should I say this, should I say that, or it's just the first time meeting, it doesn't matter. That first time meeting is just as critical as the resume. Because what I suggest to people is first you interview on paper, and then you interview in person. The second interview in person is the thing that will nail everything shut.
Wow. So the way we dress, and it doesn't have to be super formal, but you suggest a jacket. Is that for men and women as well?
Men and women. And I will say this specifically for women, tone down some of the jewelry and tone down some of the perfume.
Okay.
And I know it's a simple thing, and people kind of laugh at that, but oftentimes people have said to me, and I've worked with HR and placement people, what they have said is, she came in like a light show, earrings dangling, things shining, you know, it was, and it was just too much. Less is really better, and for a gentleman, a nice tie. You can wear slacks, but it doesn't have to go overboard. And there have been people who have told this to me, Flora, that the perfume that they wore actually left a scent when they walked out of the room.
Right.
And people are still allergic to it. So you've got to be very toned down, modest, but also where you stand out.
Okay, right. And I wrote an article once about don't wear flip-flops to a job interview. And a lot of people laughed at that, but it was a true case that one of my friends was hiring people or interviewing people to work in her facility. And one lady actually came in not only flip-flops, I think they were the fuzzy house shoe kind of thing. I couldn't believe it. But evidently this information you're sharing is not common knowledge for everyone.
Yeah, and common sense isn't common sense to everyone. And I know as your listeners are listening right now, I think if you can picture it in your mind, everyone who's listening can remember somebody that they saw come in to a work environment and you would think, what is she or he wearing? It is totally inappropriate, and you would presume that people should know, but people don't tell you what you should know. They presume that you already do. They presume that you already should know that. And so for those who are transitioning from college environment, you got to step up your dress because you're no longer in college. The way you dressed when you were working as an intern right there on school campus, you can't take that mentality into professional work environment. You always have to present yourself as this, and this is what I use as an analogy. If someone were to ask you, let's go down to a really nice restaurant after work, are you dressed so that you could do so?
Right. Okay. Okay. That's a good point. And another point regarding dressing, I think women in particular can't use Hollywood or what they see on television as a gauge, because I've noticed that the newscasters, the female newscasters, seem to be dressing a lot more provocatively these days. I mean, shoulders out, low-cut tops. And while that may pass on the television, I think people who are applying for jobs need to realize that that's not going to fly for them with most jobs.
Absolutely. And so my suggestion is always you dress to a higher level when you're first meeting someone you don't know. And then after you find out what your work environment is, they will tell you the actual gauge in terms of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And because I believe, too, Flora, this new generation is very relaxed, and even in terms of how we go to church has changed. But I always recognize that if you were going to court, you'll notice that most people dress to a higher level when they're walking into a courtroom than they do any other time.
Right, right. And that's interesting because there are specialists who do nothing but specialize in recommending to, not the jurors, but the person that's up for trial, how to dress. As a matter of fact, lawyers hire these image specialists to tell their clients how to dress. So evidently they're very well aware of the impression that the dress will have on the jury. And even if that person has never, ever worn a suit, they need to wear one to court.
You know it. You know it, because if they come in an orange jumpsuit, pretty much the game is over, you know.
That's right.
And I'll
use
another analogy too, Flora. You also notice that when it is a female defendant, they always pull back. They wear less makeup. The hair is always pulled back into a ponytail. Their clothes are always higher in terms of the neckline. And they don't usually wear high-heeled shoes.
Okay. So the dress is a critical part because of that 7 to 10 seconds that you mentioned right there at the interview. Now, what about the things that we say in the interview? I can remember one thing that used to throw people was that question about where they ask you, what are some areas you need to work on? What are some of your weak areas? How should people address that question if they get asked that? That was one that threw me years ago when I first heard it.
I think we have been taught for a long time that you never say you have weaknesses.
Right.
What is your biggest weakness? Well, I don't really have any. For a lot of employers, believe it or not, they said that was a red flag right off the bat.
That's right.
So the thing is number one, to identify your weaknesses, but number two, show how you've been able to counter those areas of weakness. And I'll give you an example for myself. I am not a good proofreader. That is something I've never been able to do, which is to proofread myself specifically. But what I have done is I target people in the workspace that I work with very well who have those skills that I may be lacking, and I learn from them.
Oh, okay. That's a very good point you just made. So you identify your weakness, but you tell what you have done, what you're doing, or how you counter or compensate for that.
Exactly.
That's excellent. That's excellent.
I mean, because it doesn't mean that I want to take the lead role on proofreading something.
Right.
But you take someone who already has that gift or talent and let them do it because it helps to build you and your area of weakness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's an excellent point. I want to share a question that one of our listeners has put on the chat room, and here's what she said. I'm searching for a new employee, and as clearly as I wrote the description, I still receive resumes from people who are clearly not qualified. What statements are employers adding to their ads to try and dissuade those who aren't qualified from applying?
Okay, and you're not alone in that process. And let me tell you why, first of all, you're receiving these resumes. Desperate means people who are desperate go to desperate lengths. That means we've been taught just apply for the job. If it's open, apply. And so you're going to continue, let me say this, you are going to continue to keep getting resumes even from people who are not qualified for the job. But something specific you can put is at the very top of your job description. You can write something like, please only apply if you have these skills.
Okay, okay.
Because often we leave that to later on in our information. And to be truthful, people really don't read all the way to the bottom of a document. They tend to read for the words that they're looking for, and then they simply apply. So if you put this literally at the top, not just seeking an executive assistant, but executive assistant for, and then put in something specific. Then when you do your job description, only apply if these are your skills, and then you give them a list of skills specifically that you're looking for.
Okay.
Not just I'm a person who's a good communicator, but people who can communicate with, boom, 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 insurance adjusters, X, Y, or Z. It has to be very, very specific. And sometimes, not all, but in some cases, it's so general that everybody just applies.
Right, okay. And I like the point you made that there are people that are going to apply no matter what you say in that interview, I mean that description, because they're desperately looking for a job. And if it's in the general category, they just apply. But I like your suggestion about putting at the very top the first thing, one of the first things they'll see is, you only need to apply if you have these skills. Hopefully that will capture some people before they hit that send button.
Exactly. Or at least hopefully it'll deter them a little bit.
But in addition to some of the things you've already mentioned, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see job seekers making? I mean, you've mentioned a few in terms of manner of dress, the handshake, the failure to make eye contact. What are some of the other mistakes you see people making when they go to, when they're either applying for or interviewing?
Okay. One of the things that employers have said is usually at the end of every interview, they'll say, do you have any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes people will go, nope, I'm ready to go. Thank you so much. They get up and they walk out. And I think it's always important to always have questions that you need to ask the employer. Because interviewing really is a two-way conversation. It's not just what they want in you. It's also what you want in them. Sometimes you'll actually apply for a job as you're sitting in the interview, and you may go, I am really not probably best qualified for this job. But you won't always know until you ask questions. Something like specifics, what are the top three or four things you need to have in the person that takes the position? Has someone else already been in the position and just left, or is this a brand new position? Questions like this will help you understand, first of all, am I coming in to replace somebody, or am I starting with a fresh sheet of paper to build this position for myself?
Okay.
You can't just ask questions like, you know, how many days of vacation do I get? You know, are you going to call my last employer? I mean, these are red flags where they go, okay, next.
I think this is a very important point you're making about having questions to ask the employer, because I always thought about my interviews as a two-way street. And as a matter of fact, I researched the company, I learned about them, and I had legitimate questions to ask. I think what this does is let the employer know your level of interest, but also your level of commitment to doing a good job, because you've made the effort to learn as much as you can, and you really are genuinely interested in their company and understanding it. So I would think if I'm the employer that this is a great candidate, you know, all other things being equal.
Right, right. And as well, if your interview is sharp like that, it also lets them know that you're going to do a great job in the position as well. You're not going to just sit back and hope everyone will tell you all the information you need, but that you're also involved. You're going to be interactive in the process of learning the job and not just saying, do you have any questions? Nope, I don't have any questions, and then go back later and start making major mistakes.
Right. So you show initiative right off the bat. And I bet you that separates you from 99% of the other people who've been interviewed, too. Huh?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, on a critical level. And, again, see, employers don't tell you what you do wrong. They tell everybody else.
<That's> and
right. They'll come to other, you know, people in the staff, and they go, did he just sit there like a rock with lips? Did he just look at you the entire time? Didn't take any notes, didn't ask any questions, and pretty much, and they're rating you. Now, legitimately,
right.
I don't mean rating like a date. But, yeah, they're looking at, this person has this quality that I really like. Number two, this person was very firm in their commitment. Number three, this person knew specifically what he was going to do and his direction. Number four, so even as you're interviewing, in the back of their mind, it's almost like a report card for each candidate.
Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that you mentioned take notes, because especially when you ask questions toward the end, to take notes on what they say so that you make it very clear that you are interested in the job, you're capable, and that you're going to follow through with what challenges are presented to you in that job.
Like to see involvement. They love to see things like that. And they're very small things. And I'll say this too, Flora. Most people really don't teach you about how to interview. They say, you know, put your best foot forward, da-da-da-da-da. But it is almost like an engagement. If you're going on a date for the first time, little things like that are what people notice.
Exactly, exactly. I want to take a moment here to ask you to please tell my listeners how they can best reach you if they want to get more information. I know that you're a speaker. You're also a consultant. They may well want to reach you for your services or to learn more. What's the best way to reach you?
Sure. First thing is, if you'd like, let me give you my email address, and you can start there. My email address is Marja, as in M-A-R, J as in Jeff, A, L as in Larry, Free, F-R-E-E, at AOL.com. That's Marja, spelled M-A-R-J-A-L, Free, F-R-E-E, at AOL.com. And my website, for those of you who may be interested in me coming to do some training for your company facilities, is www.mlfreemanconsulting.net. That's M as in Mary, L as in Larry, freemanconsulting.net.
Okay. And the consulting that you do, is this for private and public, a wide variety of companies?
A wide variety of companies. When I do Pro Speakers Bureau, I actually go to colleges and universities and literally preparing the students who are transitioning. And often, too, I'll have to say this, Flora, working with people who are already in transitioning. They may be working a full-time job, but they're interested in moving on to another position as well. I also do military training for those environments where military personnel are transitioning from military to civilian. And I do a lot of corporate training, colleges, universities. Actually, I did a major corporation, which is the IRS, because they deal with a lot of stress. I think you could probably understand why. So I still do staff training as well.
I have another question on the, over in the chat room, Marjorie. What do you think of the potential employers who want you to prove yourself by doing something that will cost you, the candidate, time and money before you even hired? Is that ethical?
No, I do not. But here's what I would do in order to take advantage of that, just a consideration. What I would do, let's say you're trying to get your foot into the door and they want you to do work outside of that. I recommend that you actually utilize the opportunity, number one, to work as a consultant.
Okay.
In other words, you can still do the task, but you still charge them for your services.
Okay.
When I was doing seminars, because I didn't officially have a business, mm-hmm. I actually did seminar trainings for some of the local homeless shelters and some of the veteran administrations. And what I did is I would come in to do a project for them. It was mm-hmm. a one-time project, but I did charge them a fee for my service. Mm-hmm. So this way you don't have to go in underneath the company and then do something unethical. You can still work your plan, but also get paid for your efforts as well.
So if the potential employer is the one that suggests that you do this additional work, that's the point at which you can let them know you'd be happy to do so under your consulting services.
That's correct. And get paid for it, too. So it's not just a freebie.
Right.
But, yeah, I will charge them for my services because time is
right.
money, and we all know that. But this
right.
is where you give your area specialty to them, but also at a small cost.
Right. And I'm assuming that this question also will cover the people who are the employers who may be sneakily trying to get you to do some work for them without them having to pay for it. You know, they may ask you to prepare a proposal or prepare a grant proposal that they can take a look at, and there's no reason why, you know, they can't keep that proposal and use it
exactly.
after the fact
exactly.
about hiring you. Yeah,
right, and
so
they may not hire, because now think about this too, Flora, and for your listeners, most companies aren't hiring full-time anymore.
Right, right.
They're not doing that. They may give you a part-time opportunity, or now with college interns, they'll do an internship for you. Sometimes the college internship is not with pay, so they're still getting your
okay.
services, but they gain something as a result, which is experience. But
mm-hmm.
for most of us, including myself, I am a professional training consultant, which means the company says, this is my need. I'll design a program for them and then come out and do the seminar training, and they pay me for my time and they pay me for my expertise. So a consultant,
right.
to be honest, is one of the better ways to go now, so you don't have mm-hmm. to give all of your talents away to one company. You can actually diversify your opportunities as well.
Right. That's very good advice. Quickly, we have 2 minutes left. What advice can you give to someone who has a job already, but they're not really loving that job? What are some things that person can do to begin to enjoy the job they already have?
Drugs. No, I'm kidding. I am kidding. Absolutely. Don't go with the drugs and got me arrested. Okay. What I would first I would first start with this. Number one is find something about your job that you do love. And
okay.
people go, well, I've been there for 16 years and it's kind of boring. I don't really want to do it anymore. But there's always at least one or two aspects about everybody's job that you simply enjoy doing and you do naturally and you enjoy it. Number
okay.
two is I would go in to do what I call an attitude adjustment,
okay.
which is rejuvenate yourself mentally by taking an actual vacation. Get away from the job for at least a week. If you've got vacation time, take it. You need to get away from what you see every day, so that
okay.
you can determine again what was it about the job that I do love and what it is I want to do with my job from now. Number three, start researching new opportunities,
mm-hmm.
other job opportunities that you can do on a part-time basis or even, again, just volunteering to do it. But it is important to not just stay right where you are, but also look at new horizons. Where do you want to be in the next 3 years?
Okay. Okay. All right. That's great. We're at the end of today's show. Oh, my gosh. And I know people have been enlightened, encouraged, and empowered by today's episode, because I have. And I want to encourage everyone to share what you've learned with your family and colleagues, and also let them know they can come back over to the show page and download this show within an hour or so. It'll be available. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, and thank you so much, Marjolise, for making time to be here with us.
Thank you for having me, Flora.
I want to invite everyone to join me again next Monday, November 8th, 2010, at 11 a.m. for another inspiring and exciting show. Let me remind you to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, to learn more about my book, my coaching, and other activities. I'm your host, Flora Brown of Color Your Life Happy, the radio show designed to help you uncover the joy you deserve. Please have a blessed week, and remember to color your life happy.